and hallelujah. This is session two of an unknown number of sessions. I want to let you know that I'm making a slight adjustment in one of my definitions from session one, and that's involving the definition of the word resurrection. It's not that I'm changing the definition. This is just a slight modification. I want it to be more narrowly focused on human beings, and I don't want it to be understood with mythical gods. Mythical gods were resurrected. You can read it in the text. That's not what I'm speaking about in the definition that I gave for resurrection. So basically, we're just narrowing the focus. We're going to be talking about resurrection as it affects humans, not mythical gods. So that's the slight modification. And when you get the notes on that, it'll reflect the update. So this is session two. We're going to finish with the pagans today. Here's the review of last meeting. For the pagans, resurrection does not happen. And cheating death is not officially resurrection. That's what we covered last time. So let's talk about what becomes of the dead. First, our first look here is going to be ghosts, shadows, vaporous and gibbering in a dark and murky world. Yes, I did not make that up. I took some quotes from some of the classics and created this. And when you see it in the text, you're going to, that's where I got it from. Okay, we're going to start with the Iliad and the Odyssey. Mr. Homer. Presently, the sad spirit of drew near him like what he had been in statue, okay, visually, voice, and the light of his beaming eyes, clad too as he had been clad in life. Isn't that convenient? Now, which outfit he was wearing, I don't know. Maybe he only had one outfit and he wore it every day of his life. I'm not sure. But that's what it says. The spirit hovered over his head and said, "You sleep, Achilles, and have forgotten me. You loved me living, but now that I'm dead, you don't think of me anymore. Bury me with all speed that I may pass the gates of Hades." Here's a problem. The ghosts, vain shadows of men that can labor no more, drive me away. They will not let me join those that are beyond the river. And I wander all desolate by the wide gates of the house of Hades. All right, let's break this down. What does it say? He hasn't been buried yet, and so he cannot get to where everybody else is. So Achilles, are you going to help me out here? Don't forget me. You need to bury me immediately because the ghosts are keeping me away from crossing the river, and so I'm wandering in desolation. You see what the text is saying? Achilles answered, "Draw closer to me. Let us once more throw our arms around one another and find sad comfort in the sharing of our sorrows." Reasonable. That's reasonable. He opened his arms toward him as he spoke and would have clasped him in them, but there was nothing. And the spirit vanished as a vapor, gibbering and whining into the earth. Gibbering. Gibbering, gibbering, gibbering. Okay. How many people saw the movie Ghost? Did you notice that the demons went whining into the earth? I wonder if they got it from this. Just wondering. But what happens? He's trying to give a hug, and he gets nothing. Achilles sprang to his feet, smote his two hands. I'm assuming that's a clap in Old English. Made lamentation, saying, "Of a truth, even in the house of Hades, there are ghosts and phantoms that have no life in them." Interesting. He can be helped on his way by being buried. Isn't that interesting? They thought that you had to be buried to get into Hades. Otherwise, you just roam at the gates. And the other ghosts, who have no life in them, run you off. Okay? The Odyssey. Ulysses, you must go to the house of Hades to consult the ghost of the blind prophet. To him alone has the queen of the dead left his understanding even in death. What does that mean? To him alone. What does that phrase mean? One entity got his understanding left with him after he died. That means what about everybody else? Nobody got understanding left after they died. That's what the text is saying. To him alone has his understanding. But the other ghosts flit about aimlessly. Flitters. And who shall guide me upon this voyage? For the house of Hades is a port that no ship can reach. Obviously. This is in because I want the PDF to reflect the text here. But here is the story of this is how you're going to get to Hades in your ship. I would have liked to have seen this on stage. This probably was very interesting. But it's there. This bullet's there because look at the branch of the river. This is the big deal river. Anybody who's read the Book of the Dead in the Egyptian stuff? So here we are in Greek mythology covering Egyptian mythology. And I thought it was really nice because this is a branch of it. So that's why that's there. Moreover, you must offer, these are the instructions, many prayers to the more feeble ghosts. So that means that we have ghosts that are feeble and we have ghosts that are not feeble. And promise them that when you get back to Ithaca, you'll sacrifice a barren heifer, the best you have, and load the pyre, is that how you say that? Pyre with good things. More particularly, you must promise the prophet shall have a black sheep all to himself to find us in all your flocks. I have no idea what that means. But obviously, you got to deal with the prophet, the only one who has memory. When you shall have thus besought the ghost with your prayers. Now we're praying to the dead, and once that's done, offer them a ram and a black ewe, and this is strange, bending their heads towards Erebus, but yourself turn away from them as though you would make towards the river. I have no idea why. Text doesn't say. When you do this, many dead men's ghosts will come to you. You must tell your men to skin the two sheep that you've just killed and offer them as a burnt sacrifice with prayer to Hades. Now Hades has become an entity and the queen of the dead. So you can see what we got there. Then draw your sword and sit there. Draw your sword so as to prevent any other poor ghost from coming near the spilt blood. So these ghosts that I'm trying to hug who flitter away, I can prevent them from getting to the blood with my sword. This is making a lot of sense. Then the seer will come to you. Now, I've skipped a section because of what we're dealing with. Look at what happens here. I see my poor mother's ghost close by us. She's sitting by the blood without saying a word. And though I am her own son, she does not remember me and speak to me. Sir, how can I make her know me? He says, easy. Any ghost that you let taste of the blood, so they have a mouth with a tongue and an ability to consume blood. These ghosts are amazing, I'm telling you. We'll talk with you like a reasonable being, but if you don't let them have any blood, they'll go away again. See what we got? On this, the prophet went back to the house of Hades because the prophesyings were over, and I sat there until my mother came up and tasted the blood. Okay, so now he's hanging out, waiting for her to come drink some blood. We'll talk about how the blood gets to the dead when we get to feeding the dead. Feeding the dead comes up later. Then she knew me at once and spoke finally, my son, how did you come down beneath the murky darkness while you're still alive? Then I tried to find some way of embracing my poor mother's ghost. We saw how this worked out last time. Three times I sprang toward her and tried to clasp her in my arms, but each time she flitted from my embrace as it were a dream or phantom. Same behavior. Okay, I can talk to you reasonably now because you drank my blood offering, but I still can't touch you, but you come near this blood without my permission, I'm going to get my sword out and slash you up. But you're already dead. Here, mother, why do you not stay still when I try to embrace you? If we could throw our arms around one another, we might find sad comfort in the sharing of our sorrows, even in the house of Hades. Does the queen of the dead want to lay a still further load of grief upon me? No. My son, most ill-fated of all mankind, it's not the queen of the dead that's beguiling you. All people are like this when they are dead. This is the dead mother. the sinews no longer hold the flesh and bones together. Does that mean that they have flesh and bones, but they're kind of dangling? I don't know. These perish in the fierceness of consuming fire. Interesting, except they didn't perish because they're still hanging around. And they can even talk to you intelligently if they drink your blood offering. So now I'm more confused. As soon as life has left the body and the soul flits away as though it were a dream. Yes, you can depend on the classics to be consistent in their doctrine of eschatology. Continuing, this is book 11, The Visit to the Dead. And in this particular section, I've only copied just a small part of it because it went on forever. And it was an interesting read, and that's all I have to say. As we two sat weeping, talking thus sadly with one another, the ghost of Achilles came up to us. He knew me. That means that these ghosts are recognizable. And spoke piteously, saying, Ulysses, what deed of daring will you undertake next that you venture down to the house of Hades among us silly dead? Catch the last line. Who are but the ghost of them that labor no more. As for you, Achilles, no one was ever yet so fortunate as you've been, nor ever will be. For you were adored by all us as long as you were alive, and now that you are here, you are a great prince among the dead. Do not, therefore, take it so much to heart, even if you are dead. What is his response? Do not say a word to me in death's favor. I would rather be a paid servant in a poor man's house and be above ground than the king of kings among the dead. What do you think? I mean, he's one of the top dogs. He may be the top dog, but he was one of the top dogs. And this is his assessment after he died. Okay, let's go to another in the Iliad. When he had thus said, the shrouds of death enfolded him, whereon his soul went out of him and flew down to the house of Hades. As soon as you're dead, your soul takes off into flight. I want to be clear here. Lamenting its sad fate that it should enjoy youth and strength no longer. You see what we have here? Let's conclude this. It seems that all the dead are like phantoms, ghosts, that type of thing. The greatest hero was miserable. What hope was there for anybody else? I mean, he's as high up as it gets. And he said, don't even talk to me about how great it is to be here. Homer. And the reason I'm using Homer is because, remember, when we in session 3, when we start dealing with the Hebrew Old Testament, and I say Hebrew because we're not dealing with the Greek Old Testament yet, we're dealing with the Hebrew Old Testament in session 3, we're going to be talking about some things that relate to Homer's position. So you need to be comfortable with Homer. Homer's dead are shades, ghosts, phantoms. No way fully human beings and unable to be grasped physically but struck down with a sword. They like blood. They can communicate if they drink it. Continue. Remember, this is a sampling. This is not exhaustive. What about the soul? Probably heard this phrase before. The doctrine of the immortality of the soul was not new to the Greeks in the age of Socrates, but had a foundation in popular belief. The old Homer notion, ghosts flitting away to Hades, a few illustrious heroes enjoying the Isles of the Blessed. I haven't even covered the Isles of the Blessed. This is where some really good people get to go after they're dead. Righteous spirits who become guardian angels. That was another good one they made up. Had given place in the mysteries and the Orphic poets to representations partly fanciful of a future state of rewards and punishments in Hades. We have a new development. If Pericles in the funeral oration is silent on the consolations of immortality, the poet Pindar, who we'll read later, and those who wrote tragedies, on the other hand, constantly assumed the continued existence of the dead in an upper or underworld. So now we have a division of the dead. So it's beginning. Homer, and now we've moved past Homer. and the soul being woven throughout the heaven. This is really, this is complex. So I only put a little bit of it. The soul being woven throughout the heaven, every way from the center to the extremity, and enveloping it in a circle from without, and herself revolving within herself, yeah, I got all of that on my first read, began with a divine beginning of unceasing and intelligent life lasting throughout all time. The soul. I was taking pleasure in investigating the immortalities of souls. No, in believing that doctrine. For I was lending a ready ear to the opinions of the great authors who not only approve, but promise this most pleasing condition. The authors promised this. The human soul is a great and noble thing. It permits of no limits except those which can be shared even by the Elohim. The body is not a permanent dwelling, but it's a sort of motel, which is to be left behind when you check out. No, when one perceives that one is a burden to the host. Sounds like I can check out of my hotel. Almost sounds like I'm being released from prison, doesn't it? Well, let's look into that a little more. I recollected myself enough to inquire whether he himself, my father, and others whom we look upon as dead were really living. The Living Dead. I saw that movie. And the remake. Yes, he replied, they all enjoy life who have escaped from the chains of the body as from a prison. Did you know that your soul is currently in prison? And as soon as you can get dead, then you can enjoy true life, escaped from your prison. Yes. Father, since this is the only substantial life, why do I linger on earth and not rather haste to come to where you are right now? That is impossible unless that God, I capitalize this, whose temple is all that vast expanse you behold, shall free you from the fetters of the body. You can have no admission to this place. What happened to suicide? Seems like that should be an option. But rather follow the examples of your grandfather and your father, such a life as this is the true way to heaven and to the company of those who, after having lived on earth and escaped from the body, prison. Our souls will not have reason to rejoice in their lot until, freed from this darkness in which they grope, our souls are locked up in darkness within our bodies. They have not merely glimpsed the brightness with feeble vision, but have been restored to their place in the sky, until indeed they have regained the place which they held at their birth. This is a new mutation. We'll get to it in a minute. The soul will reach that goal even before it is released from its prison below, as soon as it has cast off sin. Did you know you could cast off sin? And then you can head up to the heavens. And has leaped up into the celestial realms of thought. First of all, the soul does not consent to a lowly birthplace like a city. When the day comes to separate the heavenly from its earthly blend, I assume that's the soul and the body get blended together in a blender, I shall leave the body here where I found it. I shall leave the body here where I found it. I didn't know I found my body, but that's okay. And shall of my own volition betake myself to the gods. So once I'm dead, I can just pretty much do what I want to do and head on upstairs. So I am not apart from them now, but am merely detained in a heavy and earthly prison. I did not know about the prison of the soul till I started reading these classics. So the conclusion is the body's a prison. Now, continuing, there is a need to communicate. So let's talk about a form of communication. What's it called? Indeed. We're going to talk about spirits, souls, and ghosts. I've already covered these two chatting with each other. I've already covered him talking with his father and grandfather, being told, no, you got to stay in the body till God releases you. All right, let's pick up some more. First, we'll go with the Iliad. This is the quote here. See that I have it clad in life. Looks the same. You sleep. This is the same thing about I can't get in because you haven't buried me. So you can see there is a form of communication here. I had to duplicate some of these. It was just the way it was. This was the question about, when I look upon the dead, are they really living? And the answer was, yes, they all enjoy life who have escaped from prison. And he says, why shouldn't I come quickly? I mean, if that is the true life, escaping from prison, no, you can't do that. You got to stay there until God releases you. Okay, so you can see, still talking about, we've got a communication going on between the living and the dead. However way you want to see it, they are communicating. Here's the history of Herodias. Spartan king, alive on earth, calling for his dead mother to discuss who's my daddy issues. This is how I take it. Here we go. Dear mother, tell me the truth. Who is my daddy? He did not know. And there were some rumors being circulated in town. She replies, my husband, Ariston, brought me to this house. There appeared to me one like him, who after staying with me a while, rose and taking the garlands from his own brows, placed them upon my head and so went away. After my real husband returned, and when he saw the garlands, which I still wore, asked me, who gave them to you? I said, you did. But he said, no, I didn't. Whereupon I solemnly swore that it was nobody else. Then my husband, when he heard my oath, understood that something beyond nature had taken place. And indeed, it appeared that the garlands had come from the hero temple which stands by our court gates, the temple of him they call Astrobacus. And the soothsayers, moreover, declared that the apparition was that very person. And now, my son, that's how the whole truth. This ghost made me pregnant. So your father's really this ghost who's dead. Just one example, a couple of examples of communication. Continuing, eating with the dead. Back to the Odyssey again. Talking about the ghost and the prophet. What do they say? When you arrive, dig a trench and pour into it a drink offering to all the dead. First, honey mixed with milk, then wine, and in the third place, water, sprinkling white barley meal over the whole. Where did he get this recipe? I wonder. How do you Google recipes for the dead? When you shall have thus besought the ghost with your prayers, this is the discussion about how to handle this, offer them a birth sacrifice. Okay? I see my poor mother's ghost. What was the issue? The blood. Until she drinks the blood, she cannot communicate with me as an intelligent person. Reasonable being. So keep away everybody that you want to talk to, and who you want to talk to, make sure they get to the blood. So the mother comes up, tastes the blood, and then is able to talk. Okay, you see what we have here? Now, I have another one. Unfortunately, I could not find this as an original work. I had to actually quote a scholar who did it. I just could not find this in the time that I allotted myself to find it. So I'm going to be quoting from this particular book called Greek Religion. And this is a fragment. And here we go. In the first instance, the funeral sacrifices and banquet are recapitulated at increasing intervals. On the third days and on the ninth day, food is brought again to the grave, and then on the 30th day, a communal feast is held to mark the end of the mourning period. Thereafter, the honoring of the deceased is incorporated into the general celebrations with which the city honors its dead every year, called the Days of the Dead, another feast. On such days, the graves are adorned, offerings are made, special food is eaten, and it is said the dead come up and go about in the city. I'd like to know what they do. Do they shop? Do they have legal tender? The offerings for the dead are pourings, barley broth, milk, honey, frequently wine, especially oil, as well as the blood of sacrificed animals. The cult of the dead seems to presuppose that the deceased is present. Now, this presents an interesting conundrum. Once I'm buried, I cross the river, so now I'm in Hades officially, but when it's time to celebrate my death or honor me in some way, I come back so that I can access all of this food. The deceased is present and active at the place of burial in the grave beneath the earth until I'm assuming that the meal is over, and then I guess they return to Hades. Maybe they get stamped. That's it. That must be how they know they can let them back in. That just came to me. The dead drink the pourings and indeed the blood. They are invited to consume the blood in excess. Lovely. As the libations seep into the earth, so the dead will send good things up above. Let me tell you, in some of the other things that I read that I didn't put in here, they actually take pipes and they drill them into the ground. And then they pour the food down the pipes. Yes. So, concerning eating with the dead. Not my first choice of a guest. That's just me. All right, what becomes of the dead? Part two. Who wants to be a star? Cicero. Men are likewise endowed with a soul, which is a portion of the eternal fires that you call stars and constellations. Plato. And when he had compounded the whole, he divided it into souls equal in number to the stars, and each soul he assigned to one star. Yes. It's a rough job getting to the gods. Did you see any other man besides yourself strolling about in heaven? No, only the souls of two or three poets. Well, what were they doing? Well, they were seeking to catch some lyric as they flew by immersed in the billows of the air. Is it true what they tell us that men are turned into stars after death? Yes. And who is that star over there? That's Ion of Chios, the one who once wrote a poem about the dawn, and as soon as he got up there, everybody called him the Morning Star. And those stars, like sparks that plow up the air as they dart across the sky. Oh, that's the rich leaving the feast with a lantern and a light inside it. I hope they've upgraded to electrical or batteries by now. Okay, becoming a star, not what I had in mind. What about some other way, you know, after I'm dead? Do I have another option? Translation is a good option. Romulus, the famous disappearance of Romulus. Romulus held a review of his army. A violent thunderstorm suddenly arose and enveloped the king in so dense a cloud that he was quite invisible to the assembly. From that hour, Romulus was no longer seen on earth. When the fears of the Roman youth were allayed by the return of bright, calm sunshine after such fearful weather, they saw that the royal seat was vacant. While they fully believed the assertion of the senators, catch what the senator said, who had been standing close to him, that he had been snatched away to heaven by a whirlwind. Where have we seen that text before? Still, like men suddenly bereaved, fear and grief kept them for some time speechless. At length, after a few had taken the initiative, the whole of those present hailed Romulus as a god, the son of a god, the king and father of the city of Rome. This is the beginning of Rome, right here. And he was translated to the gods. That's why I said, have we seen this before? All right, let's talk about reincarnation, another way to go. You know, it's always good to have options. It's good to have options. Transmigration of souls, or let's do this again. Also, all those people who are health conscious and are interested in recycling. You know, lots of options here. If one has and knows the future, yes, everybody raise your hand who has and knows the future, that the reckless souls of those who have died on earth immediately pay the penalty, instant judgment, it's kind of like instant rice, and for the crimes committed in this realm of Zeus, there is a judge below the earth. The good receive a life free from toil, not scraping with the strength of their arms the earth, nor the water of the sea for the sake of a poor sustenance, but in the presence of the honored gods, those who get glad. Here we go. How do you get in? You got to keep your oaths. Enjoy a life without tears while the undergo a toil that is unbearable to look at. Continuing. Those who have persevered three times on either side to keep their souls free from all wrongdoing. How did that work out for you? Not working out that well for me. Follow Zeus' road to the end, to the Tower of Kronos, where ocean breezes blow around the island of the blessed. And flowers of gold are blazing, some from splendid trees on land, while water nurtures others. Sounds good, doesn't it? Bucket list is what I'm thinking. Certain priests and priestesses say that the soul of man is immortal, and at one time comes to an end, which is called dying, and at another is born again, but never perishes. Consequently, one ought to live all one's life in the utmost holiness. Not going to argue with that, kind of. For from whomsoever the queen of the dead shall accept requital for ancient wrong, she's got a lot of roles. The souls of these she restores in the ninth year. So you got to hang out for 9 years before you get restored. To the upper sun again, from the upper sun again. Where's that? You're back alive as a human. Reincarnation. It's not the resurrection part, because you're taking on a new one. From them arise glorious kings and men of splendid might, surpassing wisdom, and for all remaining time they are called holy heroes amongst mankind. Seeing then that the soul is immortal and has been born many times. That's why you'll frequently hear me say, that must have happened in a past life. Has beheld all things both in this world and in the nether realm. She has acquired knowledge of all and everything. The soul has. So that it is no wonder that she should be able to recollect all that she knew before about the virtue and other things. Except for the problem that when the souls go through this process, they have to go through the sea of forgetfulness. So now you forget. So this is how they're teaching it. You're here in this life. Then you pass through, you pick your next life, then you go through forgetfulness, and then you start over again, and you keep repeating the process. The Republic. This is the tale of a warrior, the son of Arminius, and the thousand-year wait for a new body. Different stories, you had to wait a different amount of time. This was the longest one I found. He once upon a time was slain in battle, except he wasn't. And when the corpses were taken up on the 10th day, already decayed, his was still intact. And having been brought home at the moment of his funeral, on the 12th day, he revived. And after coming to life, related what he had seen in the world beyond. There he was charged to give ear and to observe everything in the place. I put this in because you need to know that people are reporting back to Earth what is taking place down there. For he said that it was a sight worth seeing to observe how the several souls selected their lives. I didn't put it on here. It's in the text that I sent you. But here's how it works. You get called up, and you get to look at all these different lives, and you get to go, I'll take that one. All right, take it. Stand over here. After all the lives are taken, then they all get processed. They all get reincarnated, go through the sea of forgetfulness, they're back on the planet ready to roll. My last quote, after the souls had chosen their lives in the order of their lots, they were led to the daughters of necessity, the three fates, whose spindle wove each their web of destiny, whatever that means. Then they journeyed to the plain of oblivion and drank at the river of forgetfulness. So, what is my personal take on reincarnation? The first case of recycling gone terribly awry. Personal opinion. Summary. I'm going to quote Plato for my summary. For the state of the dead is one of two things. Either it is virtually nothing, is nothingness, so that the dead has no consciousness of anything, or it is, as people say, a change in migration of the soul from this to another place. If it's unconsciousness like a sleep in which the sleeper does not even dream, death would be a wonderful gain. So if such is the nature of death, I count it a gain, for in that case all time seems to be no longer than one night. But on the other hand, if death is, as it were, a change of habitation from here to some other place, and if what we are told is true, if what we are told is true, then all the dead are there, what a party! Except I didn't like those guys. I hope they're not there. But now the time has come to go away. I go to die, and you to live. But which of us goes to the better lot is known to none but God. Socrates, at his legal defense prior to being put to death, this was the conclusion of the matter from Greek mythology. So here's the summary of session 1 and 2. It starts off with Hades as a place that the dead go that has no value whatsoever. Over time, it became expedient to encourage good behavior, and the best way to do that was spruce up Hades. Real simple. It's not that bad. You ought to see the things we do. We have parties. You don't have to work hardly at all. You get to travel. You get to see your friends. And the line that I took and said, you can have all the women you want. And then I thought, well, is there a section of Hades where the women can have all the men they want? I did not find that text. So I'm not sure about that. And the drinking parties are moderated in, let's say, that not in excess. So, you know, spice it up. Here's what I like to think of it. A new life to live after each death wins the best spin zone sweepstakes. That's what I have taken away from the classics, discussing something after death. It ain't resurrection. All right, so we are going to be looking at some of these pieces of information, some of these writers, some of these documents, but not in the detail that we have done. This is the only time I'm going to go through the detail of all this stuff, because you have the PDFs, you have the links. But from time to time, I'm going to quote something that was said as I'm relating it to what is taking place in the Tanakh or the New Testament text. Remember this over here? And that's what I'm going to do. So now you're familiar with all the stuff that impacted the worldview of the first century, except for Judaism, the pagan side of the first century. So I'm going to be able to refer to it so that you'll know what I'm talking about. Because if I just told you, well, this is what paganism believed, and this is what the first century people believed, and didn't give you any evidence to, well, where did you get those concepts from? That would be a problem. Then you'd have to believe me. But see, now you don't have to believe me, because the text is all there. Most of this text was from MIT. There were a few things that I couldn't find at MIT, so I had to find them at some other locations. I did validate their existence in the library. So you can yourself see some of the different samplings of how they treat life after death, if we can really call it life. I'm really struggling with calling it life after death. But that's how they saw it. So let me tell you what we're going to do in session 3. That went fast, didn't it? Well, I'll bring it back. There we are. Yes, reincarnate that slide. Session 3, we are going to go through the Hebrew Tanakh, not the Greek Tanakh, and we are going to talk about the state of the dead, and we are going to be examining in exhaustive detail the Hebrew word Sheol. So there will be no debate about how this word is used in the text. If we're going to establish a definition for this word based on usage, then we need to look at the text. I don't know any other way to do it. So, that's where we're going. Are there any questions within the scope of the presentation session 1 and 2? Yes, sir.